This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Morning, Sangha. This is Keeping Quiet by Pablo Neruda. Now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. It's a long poem. I'll read it in full at the end. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Isn't that Zazen? An exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. I love Neruda's work, and I thought he could help guide us today, along with Master Dogen and the fascicle that we're studying on refrain from unwholesome action. There's a lot about Neruda. Some of you may know him, some of you may not. He was a diplomat, a senator, an artist who is very involved in the political situation of his time, fighting for civil rights for those of the oppressed in his country, may have even had his life taken for it. It's not clear. But the one a little fact that I pulled out that I enjoyed was he wrote in a green pen all the time. Which is for his love for the earth. He wanted us to always recognize the greenness, the renewal, the freshness, preserve this earth, that if we don't have this earth, we can't even be upon it with its elements. So most of his writing was in a green pen. But what is he asking us? Now we will count to 12, and we will all keep still. In a way, he's asking us to slow down, be in each other's presence in the face of the whirlwind of activity that overtakes our lives. We might call it busyness. A reminder to us to break the momentum of busyness that fuels what he has later in the poem, the sadness, interrupts the sadness of never understanding ourselves, of never feeling how suffering can bring us closer to our hearts and the hearts of others, rather than being in perpetual motion to move it away. To have a heart is to feel hurt, loneliness and fear. To love is to feel loss and grief. But that is hard to want that or want to experience that for some reason. So there's a zillion things, as we all know, and maybe even more so now than in his time for sure, to keep us further away. I was drawn to Neruda too, because whenever I get in the subways, I think of him. We did a underground subway retreat once, where all our writing was, we never came up. We just did all of our writing underground, just stayed under the whole day. And I was watching this rat, you know, move around, and we were doing odes. He wrote a lot of odes too, dedications too. So I was just watching, you know, being underground all day, you just start seeing things that you've never seen before. And thinking about odes, you know, you're like, okay, dedicated to, you know. And so this woman comes up to me and she says, what's everyone doing down here? And I said, oh, we're doing a writing retreat based on Pablo Neruda's odes to things. And she didn't say anything. And I was like, did I not say it clear or something? And she said, I was just at his house. And I'm like, wait a minute, you were just at Pablo Neruda's house? She says, yeah, I'm his cousin. And I was like, wait a minute, you're Pablo Neruda's cousin? And she says, yeah, we were just at his house doing something with his ashes. And she named the place in Chile. And I was just like, so every time I come to the subway, I think of Neruda and this encounter with this woman who, we had a lovely discussion after that. I was asking her all about him. In fact, I asked her about this green pen thing, and she said, yeah, he wrote in a green pen. So that was kind of nice. So this moving, this busyness. So we have this evening gatha we chant in our tradition. It's right in the back of the zendo as you walk in. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by. An opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. So Dogen wrote in a fascicle, he's a 12th century Zen master, for those of you who are new, who our training is sort of based on his teachings. That's our Mountains and Rivers Order, comes from his sutra, the Mountains and Rivers Sutra. So he wrote a fascicle, which is a profound piece of spiritual literature. He wrote in 90 fascicles in his lifetime. He only lived till the age of 52. So if you look at that, you're like, wow, this is coming out of like a 20, 30-year-old person, some of it. He wrote, "Do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the function of time. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. The reason you do not clearly understand the time being is that you think of time only as passing." So what's he saying to us? Now remember, this is in being time. So what is time? So he's encouraged us, be time itself, and there is no passing. What could swiftly pass away if you are it? Time is existence. Existence is time. We aren't static things that move through time. We are truly time itself. So many people I connect with speak of busyness. I'm the training coordinator, so when your practice isn't going along or we haven't seen you, me and Shoan are the ones that say, "Hi, how are you doing? How are things going in your life? What's up? I haven't seen you." And, you know, the response is, there's no time to do this, no time to do that, how quickly things are moving. I agree. You know, I'm a monastic, and we are always talking about it all the time. I don't have time for this, I don't have time for that. How much we're doing, what is the combustion all about? What kind of efforts are we making, and what kind of resources are needed to do it? How are we taking care? Do not think that time merely flies away. When we are full of our schedules, our to-do lists, our busyness, our life is flying by. Do we not have time to drop down and feel the moment? Do we really not have time to drop in and feel where we are, what we're doing, how we're moving in our movement? And when we don't do that, that's when we feel so dissatisfied. So we really don't need to change or fix anything. But what are we doing within that? Is it a partial moment? And we're moving on to the next thing. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. So we run around, but are we actually experiencing what we're doing? We're moving all right, but are we experiencing ourselves? If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. Do we try to be or do what we're doing while we're doing it? That's the instruction, right? For Zen training, for caretaking. Do what you're doing while you're doing it. Fill your whole body and mind. Just be your breath. Just that one inhale, that one exhale. Just give yourself to it. When you're meeting someone, just do that. And we think there's multitasking, but really look at multitasking. You can only do one thing at a time. There might be a lot of things, but can we live completely all the multiples? That's the experience, right? We can. He's saying we can. We can be time itself. We're not moving against it. Now, it might seem like everybody's being time, but I don't know if everybody's doing what they're doing while they're doing it. If a clear mind comes, let it come in. If a cloudy mind appears, let it come in. Be it. See it. Then we're not killing time. We're actually making it come alive. Right? So the best... But that's not how we're wired. The drive to accomplish in the future, we always have the next thing, so we're not in time. That's where it flies by, because we're into the next accomplishment, and that's a very powerful habit. Always striving for something other than what we have right here, right now. The habit is that event when we reach the goal. Looking for the next thing. So I was thinking, what's the best way I know to not waste time? And I was like, come up with us. Don't waste time. Don't separate. Like, really be it. That is to practice not wasting time. And every day I set aside a few minutes in which I vow to fully experience what comes my way. So we have to cultivate breaking that habit. And that's Zazen in a sense. Try not to change it, but to just do what I'm doing while I'm doing it. So, and those of you that are Ango participants, there's that concentration practice. That's that. That at that moment, whatever you said, if it's just when I wake up and I lift my toothbrush up, I'm going to do that and be there in that, be that time completely. That's what you're, that's why we said keep it really simple. Not like I'm going to go down the street and da-da-da. Too many. Just this. Every time, that's what you're saying. I am going to show up for that whole being. Buddha said, Buddha called this constant dissatisfaction of life the second noble truth, dukkha. And I'll paraphrase what he said. If we can learn about being time, we can enter into a place of satiation of our being. As time, we can touch the eternal source daily in unordinary tasks by being time. Is it possible to be busy and free? Absolutely. When does busyness obstruct our freedom and make us suffer? Here's Dogen in this fascicle we're studying on time. for wholesome action. He says, now you got to listen to this openly, because Dogen, he likes to somersault us. Okay, so he's a teacher that's using language to free us. This is a translation, obviously. He didn't write in English. But whenever we want to settle, there's going to be a wave that just takes your feet out. And so he moves within the relative life, things, phenomena, and the ground of being, the absolute emptiness of all things, the not fixed inherentness of all things, right? So he'll move between the two of them in what we call the five ranks. He'll do show the relative side, the absolute side, the integration, the merging, one within the other. So here's his statement in not creating, refraining from unwholesome action. As for unwholesome action in this world and unwholesome action in other worlds are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in former times and unwholesome action in the present time are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in the Deva world and unwholesome action in the human world are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Furthermore, there is a great difference between the Buddha way and the worldly realm in what is called unwholesome action, wholesome action, or neutral action. You with me? You with them? Okay, here comes the wholesome action and unwholesome action are time. Although time is neither wholesome action nor unwholesome action. Wholesome action and unwholesome action are dharma, although dharma is neither wholesome action or unwholesome action. As dharma is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. As dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is all-inclusive. There you go. So that's what we're working with. And this is pointing to a truth. I'm not saying I know, I'm studying this all the time, running it through myself. And eventually, like, you start to feel something from him, what he's pointing to. So, you know, when I speak to people, there's that phrase, you know how it is, life gets in the way. Of what? Like, what? Life gets in the way of what? It's a life, right? So people speak about Zazen in their life and the difficulty of sitting down at home. And even that when they take time to practice, they feel guilty, anxious, restless, just taking time to sit because it feels like a worthless activity. So it touches on, again, on this worthiness of not producing. If we don't see producing something, what's it worth? That's something drilled into us. So what's Zazen doing? And that is so immeasurable. This is one of those things in us that you can't measure what's happening the moment that you sit down in stillness with yourself and turn towards your mind and keep still, keeping quiet and seeing. Because this is so immeasurable and invisible, we can't see it and we can't touch what happens. We have to throw away our measuring sticks, and it throws us into trust and faith in the process. And the more you do it, the more you engage it, you begin to get that verified, and faith grows out of that. That's why it's yours. Nobody can give it to you. Nobody can give that to any of us. It's totally on our own aspiration that we do that. And I always tell people, Okay, you don't have time. Okay, I get it. I appreciate it. I know the feeling. I've said this before here. Sit on the end of the bed, put your feet down, get in the upright position, do three breaths completely. Be there for just a full inhale and don't go anywhere. Just be there for that. Okay, just do that and see what happens. Do that every day. Try it for a week if you're not sitting. Just three breaths. You're still breathing all the time. Just do it really intentionally on that. And then I hear in myself, I barely have time to catch my breath. Do you hear yourself saying that? So busy, barely have time to catch my breath. Or is it that we think or know how or don't know how that we can actually take a moment to orient, ground ourselves in the body, and catch our breath. And catch our breath. We're breathing, so let's catch it. Let's be there. We forget we're breathing, you know? That's why Zazen in the beginning, just sitting down, it's like you don't realize we take for granted this vital process that we have to have and has to be working for us to live. And sometimes I say in beginning instruction, you know how to relax, don't you? Be at peace, relax. You know, everyone's like, maybe that's why you're here. Breathe, breathe. Be with your breath. Knowing that we are breathing and that we need to lengthen and guard that as practitioners. We all know there are situations that will take our breath away, but we can bring ourselves back. We also know we can be plugged into something 24/7. Even in a monastic life, where we're supposedly cloistered, I watch this busyness play out very carefully. There is no activity that I'm doing that can't be summoned in some way from the outside. Never mind the inside, drawing me away. We know we can be reached everywhere now. Everywhere. In the bathroom, on the porch, on a ski slope. Sometimes it's phenomenal where I see people on something. I'm like, wow, it's here too. I see people at the monastery because there's pockets there. We don't have contact. And I see panic in the driveway. People like looking for, and I see people like behind a tree, they got something and they're on the phone. It's like, I don't know how long that's going to hold out, but we don't have it everywhere. And I see people reaching for their pockets because we say, leave your cell phone in your room. And there's just a habit now of the place it's kept. It's what we value as a world culture, but it doesn't always feel so good. So Neruda, Dogen, Buddha, so many teachers point to us of how to break the momentum of busyness that fuels the sadness of never understanding ourselves. Buddha said to his Sangha, to follow this path and experience liberation, we first have to settle things in the proper way. We have to think in the proper way. He said we're topsy-turvy. I like that. Even in Buddhist time, when it was very low tech, and by the way, I was in India and everyone's on in the smallest little huts, the whole family, I'd see the glow on a little cot on the iPhone. Even in his time, when it was low tech, when there were no flickering devices, to not be preoccupied, Buddha would tell his monks, nuns, and householders, Seek out a quiet place to do your formal practice. Protect noble silence. Be still, then move. Be still, then be an activist. See properly what we see. That's when it's most effective. To first see properly what we see, then move. Be active. We see our true nature, the true nature of everyone. We see cause and effect more clearly. We see the perfection of each Dharma state. And this helps us to see clearly in a relative sense. There is right and wrong. There is good and evil in a relative world. And to go about our tasks clearly. To not separate and blame or hate, but skillfully attend. Well, this was a kind of an interesting find. The characters for busyness in Chinese, correct me if I'm wrong, some of you, is heart-killing. Isn't that interesting? Those are the characters for busyness, heart-killing. Now I will count to 12, and we will keep still. And Dogen was known for saying, you must learn that being time is the 12 hours of nowness. So he's using the clock. And perhaps Neruda is also using the dial, counting to 12, that time, using that time. For now, in our practice, we will count to 10, and we will keep still and follow a breath. We'll sit with a koan, be awareness itself, and shikantaza. And we will all keep still. And I remember Daido Roshi, my teacher, used to say, can you imagine if like the world leaders would have to stop and like sit a week of sesshin, a week of silent meditation together, and then have their talk? He used to say, God, what would that be like? For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all to be together in a sudden strangeness. Let's not speak in any language would be a unified moment, perhaps. No discrimination based on race or language. Let's stop moving our hands so much. You know, you just watch conversations and you could tell what it's about. Right? Going on. Everyone's hands are just flailing. And here, we're rendered still. No hands, no legs. You can't run anywhere. You can't have a cup of coffee. At Zazen, you're just rendered here. Let's not fight and argue so much. Zazen is amazing in that it renders us immovable so we can find our immovable seat. I like when I am at the monastery or even here when I show people come in and they're like, can we see the place? We passed this gate many times. Can you show us around? We're like, yeah. And really, there's nothing to see. I mean, just the zendo is it. Otherwise, it's just a building. But the zendo, and people come up and they're talking, and then they see the zendo, and boom, it gets so quiet. Like you could feel that what just the space and all the sitting, what that does. It's really interesting. Dogen implores us, penetrate exhaustively each Dharma position or independent time, each moment. Kaz says, be undivided, vigorously abide in each moment. If you can take care of this right now, he says, with wholeheartedness, you create good conditions for the next right now. Please take good care of this moment. When we take our seat, it is this unique opportunity to make good use of our suffering. Big leaps and small leaps off of that wheel of samsara. I wanted to share with you the koan I did in the women's retreat in the hidden lamp, which is Zhao Zhao and the old woman's obstacles. The main case, a woman asked Master Zhao Zhao, Kong Shan, I have a body that contains the five obstacles, which are desire, sloth, torpor. Does anybody remember the rest of them? I can't remember. Anyway, things that prevent us from practicing because we have a body. How can I be free of the world of suffering? And Zhao Zhao said, pray that all beings are born in heaven and that you yourself suffer forever in a sea of hardships. So at first face value, we could say like, what? Did he not hear me? Like, what's going on with this? Pray that all beings are born in heaven and I suffer forever in a sea of hardships. This is an offering from a teacher. Thanks a lot. So, wow, that was hard to swallow. And I said, if we didn't, when we see these words spoken on a page and we don't know Zhao Zhao, it might seem very harsh. Oh, here's another harsh guy throwing his back in a woman's face, dismissing her. But when you know Zhao Zhao, you realize he could have said those words in a very quiet voice with a lot of kindness, because he's really trying to help us out, help her out. He's really trying to tell her the best way to be free from suffering. He sees her as so worthy and dignified. What are we being shown? And in a way, he's showing us, if we want to end our suffering, this is how we each do it. Not by hating the suffering, not by doing battle with it, not by trying to fix it, not by trying to figure it out, not by trying to get around it, not by trying to shrink it, not by trying to minimize it, not by trying to explain it away, and not falling into unworthiness. It's through it. He's telling us, go through yours. So when we're sitting and we're experiencing ourselves and obstacles and things that feel difficult, just in that meeting of that and our allowing that in allows us to meet our own hardship and in that way to be free. Pray that others are born in heaven, right? To be able to take care of the suffering of others. When we can see it deeply in ourselves, we can go the other way. That's what he's bringing us to. Now I will count it up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. Buddha said, be a lamp unto yourself. My teacher used to say, give life to the Buddha. I'll read the fullness of his poem. Now we will count to 12, and we will keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would not look at his hurt hands. those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers and sisters in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. I want nothing to do with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Look at this spring. Perhaps the earth can teach us as when everything seems dead and everything is alive. Our great Mother Earth teaches us everything. You know, during winter, the earth is blanketed and cold and white. It appears there's no life in the environment. Even the air is cold and frigid and frosty. However, this is not the end, and it doesn't last long. It's part of the rejuvenation, the renewal process. We just need to be aware of what we're up to. Treat ourselves wisely and try to discover the true source of satisfaction, Buddha said. All you have to know is what you are. Perhaps everything terrible in its deepest being is something that needs our love. It's Rilke. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.